rocking to the ancient rhythm, rocking to the ancient rhythm. Love is my religion, love is my addiction. African tradition, free your mind, no prison. Stop all the division, all of nuclear fission. Rocking to the ancient rhythm, rocking to the ancient rhythm. Love is our addiction, love is our religion. Rocking to the ancient rhythm, rocking to the ancient rhythm.
I really want to emphasize something that a point that you've made here, and it's something that I've said a couple of times, but it seems to go on deaf ears, and it's the fact that, you know, what we define as technological progress is not progress at all, and that at a civilizational level we might have actually been regressing over time. And that's an argument that I make, and it sounds to me like that's what you're saying, is that we've actually been regressing. So what do we mean by technological advancement anyway? What are we optimizing for? Are we optimizing for civilization, or are we optimizing for the efficiency of our machines? Right. So what are your thoughts on that, everyone? On, like, as a civilization, have we been progressing for the last 1,000 years? Or have we been regressing? Have we been discretizing the way we perceive nature, putting it into little chunks to understand it? And has that discretization caused us to, has that blurred our lens and allowed us to essentially not be able to comprehend the nuance that connects systems together in nature at the fundamental level?
Well, that's exactly what I meant. Everybody is just stupid thinking that they are the, as the Englishman would say, the dog's bollocks, you know, saying that they are I am. This problem of I am, I mean, in one thing that I do, and I found out with when I was researching electrolysis, and I looked at the pyramids of Giza and Khufu's pyramid in particular, I saw that device, it's actually a machine. It's actually a device. It's not, like they say, a burial chamber. But because some idiot that had a loud mouth, and he had, media behind him, went and said, "Oh no, that was a burial chamber," as if you need to build something that big, to bury an idiot like Khufu. No, seriously, and the people who built it were not as stupid as these people that go and say it's Khufu's burial chamber. Because when you look at, for example, when you look at that the Great Pyramid, you see that the lower chamber in that pyramid is actually covered by about an inch of salt. Why would you have an inch of salt in a burial chamber if it wasn't letting in salt water? And okay, if it was letting in salt water, it would not you would not get a buildup of 1 inch of salt unless that water was being split and some sort of electrolysis was happening over there. And of course, we know granite is one of the best piezoelectric devices materials out there. So it was some sort of a let's call it a piezoelectric device hit by a hammer of water, a water hammer. And it's very simple. All of the ingredients of that system exist. It's there. They've seen it, but they wouldn't. Just because that Carter turned around and said, "It's some graveyard." Everybody's talking about a graveyard. And that is our biggest problem. That they're not, nobody's actually, first of all, thinking that a collective solution, a collective theory is better than an individual theory. meaning that if the seven of us in this room get together and put together some sort of an answer, a theory, it would be more effective and it would be more real than just Muhammad going about his own business and figuring something out. They don't do it. It's always making, we are, let's say, human worshippers. We take one deity and all of us just worship that one deity and say, no, that is him. He, Einstein, yes, he is the most intelligent. No, he was the most stupid when it came to light bending in universe. So what makes him so great?
I agree with you. I agree with everything you've said, Mohammed. And you've said it better than I could, so I'm not going to add to it.
Well, what I say is a bit harsh. Though people like somebody else saying it, they don't like to say it themselves. They like Muhammad to go and say it, that those people are stupid. But if you want it from me, well, yes, they are stupid.
The incentive model was hacked. The incentive model for innovation is now married to capital. So I think that's one of the issues. Which is why a lot of people only find things interesting if they are useful. But on my journey, I learned that, nature isn't fundamentally supposed to be useful. So if you were to study nature, study the universe, it should be a holistic, general approach at looking at everything. It's not about trying to find a use in the theory. It's about just trying to understand and becoming aware of what governs how everything operates. That way you could be more optimal, because you yourself would follow that algorithm. So that's what I do in my life. I literally use my own equation in my life. The triangle, the infinity, and the circle, they each stand for different things. And they're like spines, infinitesimal, infinite, finite. Everything that I do has to have the skeleton. That way all my projects are connected, are interconnected. And can essentially communicate with each other, speak to each other. And I think if we implement this language in the way we build any system, the systems will have the property of interoperability, which I think is the missing property in AI and many of our systems, including our monetary system. So, and that's a whole different conversation about the monetary system and et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, I have plenty to say about the monetary system. But Odi, you don't think that skeleton and interoperability is actually, that useful thing about it all, and even in the universe and in nature, it's actually useful. Everything is useful, but it's because it's part of an ecosystem. Every component has its own application in there and has its own role to play in there. Therefore, the whole thing becomes useful. And each individual one is actually useful because they add to that ecosystem and they make that ecosystem become useful. So in reality, if we have useless components, they would not make a useful machine. So you don't think that relates to each other?
So I would just more emphasizing the fact that usefulness is not my motivator, essentially. It's sort of in line with the argument that you were making, that academia and institutions have essentially hijacked intelligence, knowledge, information to a point where if something isn't useful, then that thing is considered, not worth pursuing. And I think to understand nature, to demystify nature, you have to be divorced from the idea that nature is fundamentally going to be useful to you. right? Nature is useful in its totality, of course, and every single piece has its its part to play, but it's not fundamentally designed to be useful to you per se. But at least to understand it, you have to divorce yourself from the utility. And an example is AI. A lot of the AI systems are built to solve a problem. But AI is just algorithms. And if you look at nature as an algorithm, you could say, is nature's algorithm designed to be useful to you specifically, or was it designed to be useful to everything in nature?
First, I think we've got to identify whether it's useful or not to Odi or to Muhammad or to Ali or Maris. It's whether that is useful. It might not be useful to Muhammad, Ali, and Odi, but it might be useful to that one, one person, Maris or Varunji. So it's the fact that it's actually useful to one of us or all of us makes it useful. And the components in nature.
I agree with that.
Sorry?
No, I agree with that statement. Yes. The utility is local and global. It might not be useful to you, but it might be useful globally to some other system. Just like the organs in our body. Sometimes some organs might seem useless, but it might be being used. It might be useful in ways that we just don't understand yet. So I know exactly what you're saying, Mohammed.
There is. I think in nature, it's the notion that something can be useless is actually non-existent. Everything in nature is useful. No, nature cannot operate without all of its components being useful individually. And that's their collective, usefulness is what makes this nature so useful to all of us. Even when you look at, wildfires, we might think that wildfires are not, good, let's say, at the time when it happened. And turn land more fertile. So its usefulness is in the fertility and not in in the way it kills, the plants that are there or the animals that are there. So it's useless in the case of eliminating certain things. But when it comes to fertility, it makes the land more fertile. So that whole ecosystem. You've got to look at the whole entire ecosystem to see whether or not that nature is useful. Now, going back to that AI thing, AI, you've got to look at it as a collective effort, like I said earlier. It's not one thing, meaning that it's not just one person sitting down and saying, okay, I want this machine to go and take over the world. I want to create Terminator. No one person can create Terminator. When you look at, drawing the parallels between, intelligence and monetary policy, for example, today, Bitcoin, every idiot jumps up, Satoshi Nakamoto. When the idiots don't even look at the code and see, okay, it's impossible for one person to do this. It takes a collective effort. You need certain expertise in different fields to do it. And, they don't look at it like that. They tend to, somebody told them Satoshi Nakamoto, and everybody's talking about Satoshi Nakamoto. I find it really difficult to get the point across. Majority of people, excuse my language, majority of people are stupid and they don't want to listen. They would you tell them that, look, no, you are wrong, by the way. this is the wrong way of looking at this particular issue. And they wouldn't even contemplate giving you the chance for you to explain it to them. That's how stupid they are. Just close the doors on you. They think they know it. When you are talking about a particular field, a particular issue, a particular problem that they might have never experienced before. So that usefulness comes, in this instance, will come if your mind is able to sit back and just listen and analyze instead of just dismissing, being dismissive. You've got to sit down, in order to be useful, you've got to understand. And that's where I think artificial intelligence also fails. It cannot understand. It is only a code, that it's only a program. It looks at a problem and it analyzes that problem according to what code it has, in its core. I hope that is like clear.
I wanted to add something to that. So to the question, are we optimizing for humanity or for our systems? And to tie that to the idea of usefulness or utility, for something to be useful, for you to say that something is useful, you have to decide whether it is useful or not. So you're going to make like decisions, right? So something can be useful based on a context, and a context can be a person thinking about the usefulness of something. So the concept of something being useful, usefulness is contextual, right? Because, for instance, blockchain, Bitcoin, it speaks to a certain community. It is useful for that community. It's useful. It's gaining in popularity, right? And we're seeing more and more government adopting it as one of the ways of performing transactions. So, but it's still not yet universal, right? Maybe it will be something like money, but even paper money, we have digital money. So we have how do we call this? Yeah, a system of credit, because we have the paper money, but at the same time, you have also a credit on your bank account that tells you have $15,000, $1 million. So usefulness seems to be something that is contextual. And yes, if you think about universally, those things that can be useful. But if you think of ourselves, our DNA, or genes, sometimes decisions are made based on where we are located, or where the environment in which we are. Some of our physical, I don't know if I should say it's physical, but some of our abilities as human beings are, we don't pass it to the next generation. So even on that level, like the decision of keeping or being useful or not is always made. So the contrary of usefulness still exists.
It's relative. Of course, you're right.
Sorry, I have to leave the clubhouse, and yeah, thank you for your good speech.
شبت بخير.
شكرا يا مخلص.
Thank you, Ali.
Hi,
Jeff. Let me say one thing really quickly, Jeff. So I think Maurice and Mohammed really brought it in. And I think the topic that this takes us to is the monetary systems, and like essentially what is our monetary system? And Mohammed, you said you hate Bitcoin. Guess what?
No. Hold on. I didn't say I hate Bitcoin.
Okay, let me rephrase that. Let me rephrase that. I hate Bitcoin.
No, you shouldn't.
I don't. But I'll tell you why. Because I think that Bitcoin is Bitcoin, the Bitcoin community is operating on an assumption that I cannot accept because it's bounded like language. And you mentioned Satoshi Nakamoto, you know, this mysterious individual or group of people or cult or whatever society developed this thing, and then this guy disappears, but his wallet has half of the thing, and this is supposed to create the stability of the system. But that's not even what I look at. I look at the fact that Bitcoin is a consensus, essentially. It's a consensus of truth. And this truth is built into an algorithm that was programmed by some entity, some external entity. And the argument they're making is that the system's consumption of energy or its relationship with energy is what makes it the most, you know, the most robust monetary system or language of interaction or language of transaction. And I know we've talked about language in this room now for some time, but to tie language into the monetary system, you know, the question I ask myself, you know, to analyze these currencies that are emerging, you know, whether it be Bitcoin or Ethereum or whatever, and I know they have different consensus mechanisms. They have proof of work, proof of stake, et cetera, et cetera. And the question I asked myself was, okay, let's say that the new monetary system is a language. Let's say Bitcoin was the new language for interaction. Let's say the fiat system collapses and Bitcoin becomes the default interaction, transaction, or protocol, right? The question I ask myself is, you know, what makes this? It's like the question of the axiom. Like what is the most fundamental axiom of the universe? And does this protocol satisfy the criteria of those axioms? And another main point we talked about today was interaction. Interaction is key. So how do systems emerge? How do they interact? How do they evolve? How do they evolve? So when I analyze the interaction of any of the blockchain systems, which are computationally bounded systems, as in like they need, they're built into computation, they're bounded by computation. And as I said earlier, Alan Turing, pointed out that computation itself is an incomplete and inconsistent system. And this is akin to to language being incomplete and inconsistent also. So computation is built on language and they're both fundamentally incomplete. So we're building a monetary system that is fundamentally incomplete and is bounded by the laws of thermodynamics. That's fine. And they make the argument that this is the most powerful monetary system we've had thus far. And I'll say, let's say that that's the case, right? Okay, let's say that was the case. That makes sense as long as Einstein's representation of the universe remained the only system that we have to understand nature. As long as energy remains the only representation of natural phenomena, then we can say that might be the case. And what I realized that this system has a critical point of failure, and it's in that if someone else formalizes a more fundamental representation of how natural phenomena interacts, and this representation can derive Einstein's representation of nature, Einstein's discretized representation of nature, then this renders that system obsolete. Which means that if we were to develop our entire civilization going forward on this computationally bounded system like Bitcoin or whatever other proof of nonsense they have, right? As long as it's bounded by energy computation, it's limited in its ability to be complete and consistent. If we go back to the basic laws of Gödel, Turing, Markov, et cetera, so the argument that I make is, yes. But it might be they say that it's the hardest money man has ever made, but I'll make the argument that it's as hard as a vase, you know, a vase for a flower. But if you drop that vase in the ground, that vase shatters. So I think that's the part that they leave out, is that when it comes time for this system to be tested, they will shatter. And that's because they are bounded by they're bounded in computational systems, computational representation. So my question became, how do we transcend that? how do we have a consensus mechanism that is not limited to our, to a computer, right? And then this goes to nature. How the hell does nature do it? Now, I'm going back to the question of the room is, you know, how do we differentiate between nature's intelligence and artificial intelligence and human intelligence? Because there has to be some consensus that governs all three. And what is that consensus?
That doesn't exist.
Can I add something?
Doesn't.
Yeah, jump in, Jeff.
Because I was trying to talk since, but anyway. And what you say, it makes sense, it doesn't make sense. About, first of all, about the Bitcoin, the monetary system is based on trust. And right now, before there was several system of money, of trust, and why the Bitcoin came out, it's not because of computation, it's based because there were people doesn't believe on a certain system. Now people are jumping to the other system. Why? Because right now it's on this system with a private system. It's not a public system. It's people. That's the monetary system is controlled by a group, a small group of privately owned or individual people that control the monetary system. People think it's the government, not because all the bank, most of the bank, some of the bank, some central bank, it's public, some of them not. And most of the bank are private owned bank and they can do whatever they want. Why people are jumping to the crypto? Because of the belief. They don't believe that people, this minority, they manage well our, they don't trust about those people. It's why they went to the other system. And what's the advantage of the other system is, on the first system, the money go to a group of individual. For example, in Canada, there's about few bank, in US, maybe more. It go to a group of individual. And on the crypto, once you participate to the mining network, you get a reward. More you put it, more money you have. Anyone can participate to the monitoring system, can get a piece of pie by making this network very big and by buying mining machine. Why the Bitcoin came out is because of belief. It's not because of reason. If you understand about my point, it mean this came because of the fact of a group, like I said, it's about faith or whatever you want. This have created this monetary system. Individually, it's not from nature, it's not natural from nature.
Well, you see, first of all, that idea that Bitcoin came out as a result of people's disagreement is actually not true. And for a group of people to get together and create Bitcoin, I don't think it would have been kept hush hush. Somebody would have came out somewhere, unless it was a secretive organization, meaning a government organization. That's why a lot of people say Bitcoin is the US, Binance is China, and Ethereum is Russia. I can tell you, because I actually I'm working on a project that incorporates energy and cryptography and AI. I can tell you that no one entity can put all of that together. I've had to bring about, for example, in the energy side, I've had to collect knowledge from 5 different universities and experiences over 100 years of experience, human experience of 100 years, over a century, put all of that together to find out that the energy side. And when it comes to AI, we had to go from a let's say a cryptography team and go and consult let's say the Russian Tor M1 missile system and from on the monetary side had to go and sit down and talk to economists, not those economists that are working for the establishment. Those guys would still be trying to sell you their old lame donkey means of exchange. At the end of the day, currency, cryptocurrency, or your fiat currency is actually a means of exchange. People get fooled by saying, it's money. It's not money. It's just a means of exchange. That means I give you my tomatoes, you give me that much of your papers.
This is what I say.
It's just a means of
this
exchange.
This is what I say. This is trust. Yeah. It's based on trust. It's not based on. It's based on not.
All of it is based on trust. It's trust truck. And consensus.
At the end, it's a truck. You exchange something. I do work for you. You exchange me by something like a tool, some whatever you want. Your yes. house is truck. But at the end, you translate this to electronic system. And
what is the truth mechanism on Bitcoin? Okay. What is it built on?
Okay, first of all, it's created from peer to peer network. It was created in 1971. The first electronic, you get one of the electronic, it was called Digicall, I forgot the name.
Digicash was in.
All right, let me pause you guys for a second. The thing is, you guys, I don't want to know the history of it. I just want to know what is the consensus built with. It's an algorithm, correct? That's all I want to know. I can be very simple. I don't even know the history of it.
I see where you're going. Yes, algorithm.
It was programmed into a computer. And it's built on mathematics. So the question that I ask is, what are the mathematical rules that this program is built with? That's all I have to ask. I don't need to go into the historical context of Bitcoin. I don't really care about that. I don't think that's even relevant, right? And the point I was making is that if your system is bounded by computation, then it cannot be the most fundamental system.
Oh, it definitely isn't.
That's all I'm saying.
It definitely is.
And I think that's where the flow of Bitcoin comes in.
I understand what you're saying. I'm just reacting to what you're saying. I didn't say Bitcoin is the best solution. I didn't say I didn't say Bitcoin is the best solution. I'm just asking to your question. And my question, the other question I want to ask from you, what's the purpose, what's the goal of having a universal language or universal intelligent language, and can tell me what's the purpose of doing that, and can you answer from this, and I may ask you more question also.
No, that's an amazing question. That's a great question. That's the most important question. Is what is the consensus that we could discover? Because of course, it's not about creation; it's about discovery. Because intelligence is omnipresent. So, what formalization can we discover that we could use to create a consensus or discover a consensus that is more powerful and domain agnostic than Bitcoin? And the argument that I'm making here is that the current systems for consensus are built with computational algorithms, but algorithms are not bounded to computation. Algorithms exist in nature. An algorithm is just rules, rules, operations, and evolution. So how can we formalize that in a way that is not bounded to a computer and can be represented on any domain? So I think that's really the premise of the language of intelligence, is that it's to define a language that we could represent in a computational sense, but we can also represent in a non-computational sense that it has the exact same meaning, but we cannot do that with an energy bounded system, because over time energy dissipates, and this is due to the laws of thermodynamics. So that is what I'm saying. I'm saying that yes, it's useful in its current state, But if we're to design, if we're to use a, if we're to pick a language for our civilization, because my assumption is that, my intuition says that, you know, over time, one of these cryptocurrencies would become the, you know, the God protocol, where everyone uses that to interact, to transact. So my fear is that, you know, this might be too brittle to be something that we use for at a civilizational level. You know, that we might.
You mean Bitcoin? Or do you mean Bitcoin is too brittle?
Bitcoin, any system that is bounded by computation, any language bounded by computation is too brittle, because computation itself is incomplete. And this is what Voronzhe emphasized earlier when it came to the incompleteness of language and how it manifests itself in our computation.
I'll talk a bit about how Bitcoin works. So there is this proof, it works on the proof of work algorithm, which basically means a lot of computers are just competing to solve a factorization problem of two large prime, like two or more large prime numbers. So that is the basic mathematical work that is being done. And it is all contingent on the scenario that factorization of large prime numbers is an NP-hard problem, which is that it cannot be solved in polynomial time by any of the computers. And this is not proven anywhere. So if tomorrow a polynomial time algorithm is discovered to actually factorize large numbers, then Bitcoin actually comes apart.
Boom.
It's there, Guru. You can look at today. We've got these quantum computers that can break equations in nanoseconds. So the actual code of the Bitcoin, for one, can be broken. That's one. The second is when you're talking about the algorithm, the consensus in Bitcoin, that we can also break. For example, if we've got enough computational power, just one entity, if they have enough computational power, they can actually change the code of Bitcoin as well. So I agree with Odi that it's a lame system. It's that same old lame system that was put together by David Chaum in the 90s, which David Chaum was one of the earliest should we call it a cryptocurrency? It was a means of payment, a means of exchange.
It was 1990 something.
Yeah, I like the word means of exchange instead of saying this is a currency or this is money or a thing. Because the euro or the US dollar, specifically US dollar, I don't see US dollar to be money. It's just a means of exchange that people have agreed after the Bretton Woods meeting that they accepted that yes, it's going to be our reserve currency. And instead of the pound sterling being the reserve currency, it changed into the US dollar. And that on its own would tell you that neither Bitcoin nor your US dollar is going to create that one single language. It's not going to happen. That one single language, these globalists have tried to introduce it if it was in terms of monetary, if it was in terms of policies, our systems, they've tried to have that. And that guy, the CEO of BlackRock, said that he didn't think that that this plan that they had was so fragile that Vladimir Putin actually buried it in one move that he did, the moment he said that we're not going to accept any U.S. dollar, and we're only going to accept the Russian ruble for our energy, and in order to get our Russian rubles, you need to give us gold. That destroyed that one, that system that they were trying to, that one language that they were trying to introduce. So I think the notion of that one language is actually wrong, because as humans, we are individual. We might be a community, let's say in Far East Asia, and we like to live in a certain way. We don't like the smell of your money. We're going to create our own. And the other guy might not like the smell of my armpits, and he will use a deodorant, so we're all individual. That one language will never exist. At the moment, we've got, let's say, our computers. But when these quantum computers and qubits, two ones and two zeros, come into mass use, that whole spectrum is going to change. I can tell you with a D-Wave, which is that Canadian quantum computer, I can crack the Bitcoin code.
I have a question. Let's say you move everything to an environment that nobody knows, a language that you don't understand. How can you crack something that you don't understand?
Did you say that if you move,
let's say we invent a new language that nobody knows, a new way of operating system, a new way of browser, a new way of language, and nobody understand, how can you crack? Our quantum computer can crack our system. If it's not a system that people understand, but this system could be compatible to other system.
Compatible or interoperable?
It's compatible. It could be compatible to other system.
Well, competition between systems is irrelevant, because you might have a system.
I give an example. You get hacked because you have a reporting system, because you use Linux, because you use Windows, everything you can decompile, you can do, because everybody knows about the structure. But if you create something that nobody knows, nobody understands, how can you crack it? Because the value of the data, there's no meaning for the data.
Okay, I'll give you an example.
I could be in front of you. It's like I'm invisible. You can see a paper. You can see a paper on the floor, but the paper doesn't mean nothing.
So Jeff, you see, yes. If you invent, and my nephew, has invented his own language for his, for his IT. But the moment that device or that system of yours has to speak to my system, the code is broken.
Let's say there's a way to protect it.
You can't. It's impossible.
It's possible. We'll talk.
Sorry? Sorry, Jeff. I didn't hear
I
that.
I told you it's possible. We can speak, and if you want.
It's impossible, Jeff, because it has to talk to my system. If you're going to have a system that you are going to be operating on your own, and it's not going to be talking to my systems, yes, of course, you can have it. It can be a secret system, and only you.
The first part is done.
The first part is that?
Yeah, it's done.
Yeah, of course we can. I'm telling you, my nephew has got his own language between his systems. You can never crack that. Crack his system, because he doesn't allow interaction between his system and any other system. But the moment your system, for example, your, let's call it Jeff computer, speaks to Mohammed's IBM, let's say, or Apple, The moment that that happens, the moment it has to speak to each other, there has to be an understanding between those two languages. And the moment that there is an understanding between those two languages, your code is out. It cannot remain a secret. It can be broken.
Mohammed, I would like to add to that. Basically, if Jeff designs a system which is an algorithm which is actually non-polynomial in the quantum computing space, it's going to be pretty difficult for you to crack that. But I don't think that algorithm has been designed yet. People are, like, a lot of researchers are working on it. But yeah,
Mohammed, even you crack it, you'll see you go to a nowhere. You go in nowhere. You crack nothing.
So are you trying to say, Veru, are you trying to say that, let's say, in a quantum state, that code cannot be, preserved and it cannot be broken? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, so basically encryption in the quantum computing space, that is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. You know the example I gave you, D-Wave. Have you heard of D-Wave?
Yeah, in Vancouver, Canada. Yes.
Okay.
I have access D-Wave, to the computer.
Sorry?
I can have access. I know them.
Yeah, okay. They have their own encryption. As long as that system remains on its own. Let's say if we had in a building and all of our computers were tied to that D-Wave and it had no connection to the outside. Yes. But the moment it has to be interoperable, meaning that it has to speak to other systems, you cannot, its integrity cannot be guaranteed. It can be broken.
Okay. I'm assuming that is coming from some very trusted source, because if there is an encryption algorithm in the quantum computing space, research papers on that, so must be very classified.
I can't hear you. I don't know if everybody else can hear him.
I can't hear you.
No, I was talking. I was talking about Varunji.
No, him. No.
Varu, if you can hear us, can you please now repeat what you were saying?
Hello.
Yes, I can hear you now, Varu.
Am I audible?
You're audible.
Yeah.
You're
okay. Audible. So I was just saying that. It's interesting. I'll have to look into this. I wasn't sure, like, I didn't know that even encryption in the quantum space has been broken. But yeah, I get the idea what you're trying to convey here.
Okay, I'll give you an example. You know, the for example, the Bitcoin encryption. Everybody, yeah. Like Odi was saying, that everybody is saying, oh no, this is the best thing that has ever happened. Did you know that if we have a 51% attack, we can actually even change its structure?
Yeah, 51% attack or the Sybil attack, that is what you do there. For that, basically, the network strength would need to be, like, a lot of people would need to adopt Bitcoin actually to prevent a Sybil attack from happening.
That's
like
what I mean.
They would need to work as miners and ensure the integrity of the system.
I understand, but look, if that is the case, if that encryption with enough computing power, which is the 51%. If it can be broken, What makes you think that whatever code you write or whatever code is written, regardless of what state of intelligence it's in, whether it's in quantum or our traditional means, what makes you think that it's impossible to break? Because like Odi was saying, that everything has got there is a breaking point. That I understood what you were saying, Odi, properly.
That's correct. That's correct, Mohammed. You said it better than
I. Yeah. Okay, so I think we are on the same page here. I was just referring to basically creating a system which cannot be hacked into. Creating a monetary system which cannot be hacked into is probably what you're looking for an answer for. So yeah, I don't think I have an answer to that question, but
So that's exactly what the premise of the room is that
yeah.
if we decode the consensus, or if we discover the consensus that governs how we operate, how we emerged, how we interact with each other at the fundamental level, beyond the quantum level, then theoretically speaking, this could be the same consensus that we apply to our interaction, whether it's transactions or just communication. I'll pause. Go ahead.
You know you're going really too far with this, because what you are actually saying is, can we produce the impossible? You can't. There is always limitation.
Alex, can you explain? And I left the room and came back, but I feel like perfect point, because I was exactly trying to say this earlier about the language. The language is doesn't matter, as long as we have to communicate and we have to have a common goal or some purpose. Language doesn't matter. It's easy to
Marlene,
understand.
So look, let me interrupt you for a second there.
But then you said something.
I think the language, Marlene. Let's clear something up real quick before you continue. Yeah. Let's clear it up really quickly. Just so we're on the same page here.
Yeah.
When I say the language of intelligence, the language is the consensus. The language is not the language is what we agree on. So I know you mentioned earlier about a common goal or common whatever, right? Common something.
Purpose.
That common something. Yeah. It's the consensus, but we don't have to explore our physical reality to discover this consensus, because this consensus precedes our own existence. This consensus was here before we emerged in our physical reality, and this consensus is what governed our emergence from our mothers and the way we interact with our environmental systems and the way we eventually die. This is the same consensus that governs that. So if this is the underlying thing that governs how all systems operate, emerge, and interact, then why wouldn't this be the language that we use to interact, even with our monetary system? That's the argument that I'm making. So I see what you're saying there, but the language is the consensus. Like mathematics is a consensus, and mathematics is the language of understanding nature.
No, but you're saying the language of intelligence. You're creating a language of intelligence so that we can have interoperability, so things can speak to and communicate with each other in a network. So that is still, if you're saying emergence is what the language of intelligence is, then we already have the answer. So like, what is this debate about? What is this dialogue about?
I'll tell
you what I'm saying.
Marlene, one second. What Odi is looking for is the language of the creator.
No, I would like to explore this obvious, because I'm not sure it's quite obvious. So I would like to know what is this thing that is obvious that we all agree on? Because I actually have no idea.
We don't agree on anything.
I think you're looking for the language of God.
As a testament to the room.
That's what I said. He's looking for the language of the creator.
This is the
No, but what I'm saying is also what is a little disturbing is you know, and I'm calling you Alex because that's what I know your name as initially. You're saying you already know the answer, but you're moderating this dialogue. You're already influencing the dialogue just by the idea that you know the final outcome of it, right? Do you see that as well? Because that will definitely feed into what you're saying. Because the consensus is you are bringing us to a consensus that you have already
an argument can be made, Marlene, that that's how all consensuses were achieved, is a point of emergence and eventually a point of interaction where all the other systems interact and then become aware of that consensus and then would eventually acknowledge it. So an example is Einstein's relativity theory, as Mohammed pointed to earlier, and Voronezh, is that a lot of the theories and formalizations that that emerged were, you know, were not like intuitive to a lot of people, and it took time before people became aware of them and then eventually were able to internalize and then acknowledge them. So I think the same process applies here. So that's why I don't really take it too personal when people disagree with my perspective, because I think that's part of the process. is that it emerges, it has to emerge at some point. And as it emerges, it's going to now follow the same principles. It's going to emerge and it's going to interact and it's going to evolve. And yeah, we're going to now see how that manifests itself in humanity. So this room is an example of that, is that we're seeing now the dynamics. Like, for example, the consensus in the stage hasn't been reached yet regarding the theory, but that's part of the process, right? And that I think the whole thing is beautiful. That's why I enjoy it. I think the whole thing is a process.
And maybe the consensus would not be reached because, for example, you have Mohammed in there and he's not going to agree with you.
Yes. I have a question. Last time I told you, what's the purpose of having this language of universal language? Mohammed just said what I was thinking. You look in the language of God. Once you, let's say you find this language, what you will do with that language?
Absolutely, Jeff. I think this is
He will try to hack Mohammed's brain.
Can I answer this, Mohammed, really quickly? And I think this is why a lot of people have to really understand my motivation for understanding this. And I'll tell you, it's very simple. So I was born in Africa. So maybe there's a different algorithm that governs me, but I have no monetary incentives. Like I don't really care for making money. My goal was to actually understand myself. So I wanted to figure out I come from a family of philosophers. So this is very natural for us to discuss, you know, philosophy and how, like, you know, how, you know, just how everything operates at the fundamental level. So my question became, you know, how do I fit in with just not my family as a system, but every other system? Because when I look into nature, I see that there are different families. There are families in the animal kingdom. There are families in biology. We literally call them families of, you know, of species, et cetera, et cetera. So my question is, how do I, as a biological human system, fit in with every other system in nature? There has to be an underlying principle that governs how we all operate and governs how we all interact with each other. Because even if the interactions might not be conscious to me in my human reality, it might still be something that, you know, it underpins my existence, right? And that's where my motivation came from, is that I wanted to figure out myself. And Mohammed asked about what would I do with this? It's not for me to do anything with. It's for me to become aware of it and acknowledge it. And then my plan is to hope that other people would achieve the same awareness and acknowledgement that I have, because it's if it's something that, like I said earlier, truth precedes proof. So if it's something that is, if this is what truth is, I think it helps in the orientation of humanity, because it gives humanity a perspective, a direction, a point of emergence where now we can now orient ourselves with respect to everything else in nature. And that's really the motivation. It's not monetary motivation at all. The equation, everything I do is to get people to be aware of it. It's just an equation. It's like Einstein's equation. All you have to do is become aware of it, then acknowledge it. That's all you have to do. I'm not asking for anything.
I have a question. So, let's say we say you're looking for the language of God, we'll say it, and this is a language is use it for kind of prediction or to understand. And they say this language is a tool. You go to the bad person. And this bad person, from the outcome from this decision of this solution algorithm, whatever you call it, it said, I should eliminate people because of this kind of prediction. Or I want to prevent stuff. I want to prevent something because if I don't do this because of your language, that's because of this kind of language to understand life or nature. What do you say about that? Let's say it was happened in 1914 or 1940. And this guy said, I'm using this. This is the reason I should eliminate people. What do you have to say about it?
No, so that's a really good point you brought here. And we can talk about, you know, nuclear weapons. Is that, you know,
I use this and this is the reason I have to kill.
So, no. So I want to make a point really quickly, Jeff, is that for us to build weapons of that capacity of destruction, we had to basically use Einstein's equations of energy to be able to do that. So somebody had to formalize energy in a concise manner and stabilize it to a point where we're able to use it to create weapons. I mean, I didn't do that, but people that acquired this knowledge did it with were able to do it with that information. So in this case, what makes this a bit different is that nobody can. This isn't an algorithm that is bounded to energy. So any human that becomes aware of this can utilize this equation, and that's the beauty of it. It's applicable locally and globally, and I think that's the main differentiator between this language and other languages. So that other languages are bounded, they're local. They're localized. This language is universal and it's applicable locally.
Well, at some point, let me just add two words. So at some point, that language will still use energy because those who are involved in perpetuating the language use energy to exist.
I have a question also. Let's say your infinite energy exists now and your language is not created now. Now you know this infinite energy is done. What you will do?
I'm sorry, Jeff. I would like to hear your question again. I think it sounds like an interesting question, but I don't think I understand.
Okay, let's say...
What he means is it's that language in its entirety, the dangers of that language encompassing infinity, and when it becomes infinite, it gives all of those individuals that you were talking about the power. So any individual in that chain can actually eliminate the rest of the rest of the chain.
Exactly. It levels the playing field for humanity. I'm not sure how to. Yeah, I think Mohammed, you said it better than I could. It gives you the power. I don't want to go too metaphysical on this, but you know.
Yeah, Odi, it gives everybody the power, and that's the danger. When it does that, anybody, for example, if there is like 10 of us in that community, and all of us have got that power, when the others are not watching, one of us can actually turn off the rest of us, therefore immediately eliminating the other 9 individuals. And that's where this becomes impossible. It's just a solution or a language in somebody's figment of imagination. That's it. That cannot exist. That is God in my belief. That is the creator. You are trying to cross that bridge between a human, our existence, where it is limited and unlimited, which is the creator in my view. me as a Muslim, I look at Allah, for example, to be the ultimate.
Hey, Mohammed, everything you said was correct. And the thing is, that's why I think people shiver or they get nervous when you start talking about the God equation or the God, whatever God. But I don't think it's about grandiose. I think it's just about totality. I think the godness is about totality. Like a God is someone that is able to comprehend the totality of nature. So if you're able to comprehend the totality of nature, you harness now the power of God, because now you can use that same representation to create, right? And this power, that's why it gives the power to everyone, locally and globally, because you now have the power, you now have the algorithm for creation itself.
Go ahead, Marilyn.
No, I was just gonna say, the purpose of the room is for us to recognize that we already have this power, right? So once you recognize that and you have that awareness, what do you do with it in the local surrounding or the geofence that you have? How do you leverage and utilize that power? I think that's the purpose of the room. Correct me if I'm wrong, Alex.
It actually has to be looked at what can be done with it, not what you're going to do with it. One person might be good and they might choose something good to do with it, but another person might be bad and they would choose something bad to do with it, meaning they could switch the other nine individuals off.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's the person's motive that gives that impulse to do something good or bad with it, isn't it?
Of course.
Yeah, I think that if I can say a word, I think that this fundamental idea that, so I think that the Einstein example is valid, and Einstein himself, right, his whole thing was to find a grand unified theory of the universe, and he this was what he was trying to do. Now the application of that, how we are going to apply it, has very, very two different dimensions. You know, if we focus on the more destructive dimension, and you know, so then by that logic, relativity theory should never have come out, because then maybe the atomic bomb would never have come out, and you know, Hiroshima and Nagasaki would not have been bombed out of the planet. But one, that's what happened, and not to be, you know, unsympathetic about it. But the other thing is that the value that I see, and whatever a little I've heard of, you know, I was in Odilon with another room earlier, whatever little I've heard from it, is that the possibility that we could, from this, get to know our real relationship with nature is so, I mean, that we could look at it from that perspective, because we are certainly we are already creating the monster in that sense, right? We know that we are destroying nature. We know that we are destroying, the ecology and the planet that we are living on, and things are getting kind of delicate. So in that sense, we cannot ignore that. And then, you know, the danger of, I don't know, I don't see the, I don't see that the unnecessary focus on the danger of it should inhibit at least such an enterprise. Because, you know, you cannot limit the human imagination. And that imagination is now being turned into mathematics. I don't know the mathematics, right? Now, if this is valid or not, I'm not going to comment on that. But I think I appreciate, one, I appreciate the effort. Two, what I have heard in terms of the underlying philosophy of it is something that I'm definitely very much in agreement with. To me, it sounded very sound. and very kind of whole, you know, because and not just a one kind of one dimensional perspective on let's say scientific mathematical thinking. So that is how I have seen, which is why this kind of attracted me, and I thought, you know, this is interesting, because this is something which requires a certain insight to see that, you know, it's not that we are the ones that here designing everything, right? So if you talk about a God, then the point is that the God is not something totally separate from us, right? We if there is such a thing, then we are not completely separate from it. And so we want to, and neither is nature. So we want to be able to come to a right relationship with nature, at least. You know, I'm going to leave the word God out of it for now, but definitely we want to come to a right relationship with nature. And if that can happen through mathematically, right? Because hey, you know, I think it's a good direction to go. And to me, that's the thing I think of. I don't think so much of the destructive aspect. Now, if as a race we are intent on destroying ourselves, we'll find a way to do it, believe me. You know, it's not going to be this or that. We'll find a way to do it, and we have been finding ways to do it. So at this point, in terms of a risk assessment also, I would consider it a worthwhile enterprise.
Marisa, I cut you off. I don't know if you want to add your points here.
Well, thank you for the feedback, Deep. Much appreciated. I rarely hear people acknowledge my work. So, you know, I'm not sure what the motivation is, but, you know, my goal is really just to have people become aware of something that I think nature is very simple. And I think, you know, academia has made it seem as though it's this complex thing that only a clique would be able to understand. But I think all humans have the ability to understand and digest nature in its totality. So I think my mission was just to, you know, formalize a representation of that in the simplest form that even a child would be able to comprehend. And that's why I think symbolic abstractions are fundamental to that to that language. And my goal is just to get people to become aware of this. That's my only goal.
And why this appeals to me is because I also believe that nature is foundationally very simple, and then it has this infinite complexity potential that you can get into as well, right? Because, you know, you can keep on unraveling it, and nature is not unidimensional. There are so many interactions. If we assume that there are discrete things interacting in the universe, there's so many things interacting with each other. So in that sense, and to me, why I like this is, you know, and that the simplicity, because to me, I am also interested in the psychological perspective of this. The simplicity is also a kind of a simplicity of mind, a simplicity of thinking, or maybe not overthinking, kind of both of those, you know. And when there is that simplicity, then unnecessary degrees of complexity do not need to be added to things. And I think we have been doing that. And when we do that, then we stray away from the foundational simplicity of nature. And if we stray away from nature, we do it definitely at our peril, you know, then either we do it at the risk of an evolutionary collapse, right? Or we do it at the risk of morphing into some other kind of organism. Now, you know, some people like are okay with the fact that, you know, like they would rather look to AI as the future and you know, let it run, let's say the planet, maybe saying that it'll do a better job. But I certainly, I mean, that's not a For instance, something I subscribe to in terms of the ethical, if we bring in the ethical idea, I think that there is far more possibilities. And I also believe that, you know, it's also a question of fundamental liberty. And we don't even know, actually, I don't think we've explored our own evolutionary potential. I think we're just in the middle of it. And so such things, if they can push it forward, I mean, very rare. And Odlo and I also very rarely come across such perspectives which take nature into account, because mostly what I find in science and the discussions around science is that the aspect of nature or some sort of an insight or understanding of nature is completely absent. It's almost like the human mind is everything, all our creation, imagination is all there is, and we already live in a lot of an artificially constructed world, and you know, nature is blocked out, and that is a problem as far as I see. So I think it's refreshing to hear and maybe explore further.
So I have a question, and so I think that we've talked a lot about, like, around the language and the consensus and all these great things. And I recall that Odilon characterized computers and anything that works within computers, language that we use with computers or the systems that we've created with computers, that they are brittle, right? So I was wondering, what is it that makes this language, the language of nature or the language of God, what makes this language of the creator, what makes this language unhackable? Is it unhackable, first of all? What are the characteristics? Before deeming that it is hackable, well, how can we prove that it is hackable? Or should we just believe that it is hackable based on our interactions with everything around us?
So let me see if I understand your question, Maurice. So you want me to expound on the limitation of computation?
So the characteristics of the language, the nature's language, which is based on universal consensus, or the language itself being a universal language. You use them as synonyms.
So I think the argument that I'm trying to make is very simple. It's that, you know, we talked about Bitcoin earlier, and Bitcoin having a consensus mechanism that is built on, you know, an energy consuming algorithm, essentially, and this is the source of truth. But the issue with that is that, you know, if we design our interaction framework, which is what we call the monetary system, you know, how we transact with each other. Transaction can be any arbitrary interaction, right? The transaction, whatever sort of exchange it is, whatever sort of arbitrary exchange it is, it's an interaction at the fundamental level. So the question becomes, if we're to define sort of our truth in this, our truth or the language that governs how we interact, and then we bound this into a computational system, and we understand that computation itself is incomplete and inconsistent, and this is if we could invoke Kurt Gödel and Alan Turing with the limitations of language, at least human language, and the limitation in computation, that this tells us that our interaction model, our language of interaction of transaction, cannot be bounded into a computational system. So I'm pointing to the fact that Bitcoin and the other derivative blockchain-based currencies that have truth have a truth consensus mechanism that is built into a computational system are brittle. They're brittle, and that's because they're bounded by many things, not just language, but computation itself. So the argument that I'm making is that how do we circumvent that boundary? How do we have a consensus that is more robust than Bitcoin? And the reason why I picked Bitcoin is because Bitcoin is currently being described as the hardest money that man has ever created, because it's bounded by this algorithm, and it's supposed to be, you know, it's supposed to be decentralized and immutable, et cetera, et cetera. So the argument is that if we were to discover, so let's say that, let's say I've not yet made the claim that I've discovered it, but if we were to discover a consensus that already governed natural system, natural phenomena, then the question I ask for the room is, will this consensus be superior and more robust compared to the consensus that we have in Bitcoin? And I think that's the main argument that I'm making. And I think the answer is that will be the case, that nature's consensus mechanism is superior and more robust. Whether you want to define that as hack proof or whatever, is that this will be a better representation of how we interact with each other, because that's how nature interacts.
Okay, Odi. Nature interacts but doesn't have consensus, you see. Each individual character goes about its own, destiny, its own life, and it makes things happen. And at times and at other times, it's, docile, it doesn't do anything. See, this is what you've got to understand. When you're talking about that language of nature,
the only time, brother, that I will disagree with you, but
I haven't finished it yet. Now, when you talk about nature, like I said it earlier, nature is not one thing. It's an accumulation of a lot of things. Now, when you're talking about a language that has different characters, like nature has got different characters. It's a compilation of these players or characters, and it does things according to in a certain environment. For example, a wildfire, it does a certain thing there, and it does some other things, somewhere else. It has an effect somewhere else. So that language, first of all, does not exist in that format that you're thinking about, because nature is it's natural, it's nature. It actually has a whole ecosystem.
I don't think you can make that claim, though. I don't think that's a. I'm not sure. Okay, so what axiom are you using to make that claim? I see where you're coming from, but I don't think you can make the claim that the consensus that governs nature is only local, because I think it could be. I think it could be local and global, and I think that's
but what that's we have exactly to reconcile. What I said, Odino. I said it affects something in a certain place in a certain way, and somewhere else it will have a different effect. That's exactly what I said.
So we have to account for that. So if we're to account for both, then that has to be a general language, correct? That has to be a language that represents how nature operates at all levels of the gradients, correct?
No.
So no. And that's my point.
No. Because you're taking its entirety, which is that infinity, and you're saying that no, this must be a language. It's not a language. It's a compilation of different different, let's call it, players, different characters that form that let's say nature. And it's not a language. It doesn't have an algorithm that it operates in. It has every character in there has a different algorithm. For example, us as human beings, we've got a different algorithm in the way we operate compared to, let's say, the insects or the plants.
There's an argument to be made about that that I'm not sure I agree with you, and I'm sure other people would probably disagree with you too about that. Is that at the fundamental level that rule, that algorithm might be the same?
Yeah, I think that would be, you see, Muhammad, that would be like, you can't deny the interoperability of all, even if you consider this discrete, like you're saying, and compilation of discrete things, those discrete things are interacting. And I can't think of anything that you can take out of the ecosystem that is not interacting. It's completely interoperable, it is operating in an interrelated fashion. That is very clear, right? Like
that's exactly what I said, no?
Yeah. No. See, the thing is, the difference is when you say it's a compilation of individual, what I'm trying to say is that the sum is more than the parts also.
Yeah, but for interoperability to be true, it has to be a compilation of different individuals.
No, what I'm trying to say is that there are different individuals, but the fundamental, that there is a fundamental relationship between everything that we are saying is individual, cannot be denied. I mean,
meant. You see, you're using the terminology interoperability. Interoperability means we have individual mechanisms that are talking to each other. That's interoperability.
No, maybe that.
For example, today, let's say in cryptocurrency, they have multi-chain, cross-chain. That's allowing interoperability. But those blockchains, each one of them has got its own algorithm. It's different algorithm, but they have interoperability. That's exactly what I mean. You've got different characters that are interacting with each other. Of course, there is interoperability somewhere.
I use the wrong word. Then I use the wrong word. Because when I say interoperability, it assumes the discrete nature of everything, and then you're saying that it is interoperable. And I guess that's not the word I'm trying to use. What I'm trying to say is very simply, right, that at some level, everything in nature, you know, whether it is different individuals or whatever you can think of, is intimately connected to the ecosystem. And if there is such an ecosystem, if the earth is an ecosystem, that means that there has to be one unifying idea. Otherwise, it cannot work together, which it does. That's what nature does. Nature works together, right? And there is nothing that you can think of, as far as I'm concerned, that you can take out of that ecosystem. There is nothing in nature that you can take out of the ecosystem, because if you can take it out of the ecosystem and it is able to operate on its own, then you can say that is a compilation of discrete things. But it is, that's what I mean, right? That is the part which you can't ignore. The ecosystem, that's how the ecosystem works. That's how it is. There is something underlying connecting factor there. That to me is fairly apparent in the workings of nature. And it can be actually easily proven. Just
rocking to the ancient rhythm. Rocking to the ancient rhythm. Love is my religion. Love is my addiction. African tradition. Free your mind, no prison. Stop all the division. All of nuclear fission. Rocking to the ancient rhythm. Rocking to the ancient rhythm. Love is
our addiction, and love is our religion. Rocking to the ancient rhythm, rocking to the ancient.